Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled My Whole Life is About Obsolete Formats, and it's about, it's really about living and creating in the age of austerity. And our guest for this episode is someone who knows a little something about obsolete formats, or who actually said in passing to me the title of this episode, credit where credit is due, Mr. Jason Baldinger, who is a poet, and you're in a band, and you do all sorts of other things, and you're doing all these things in the age of austerity, and so, you know, how's that working out for you?
It certainly doesn't pay the bills.
Which is awful.
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, you live in a society that devalues its art and or doesn't even take pause to notice its art, so therefore how do you make money as an artist? That becomes the challenge. I suppose that with painters and sculptors you can still find a benefactor. Writers don't get those sort of commissions, generally speaking, and if you're not run through a university system, you don't get the grants that go with it, so you find yourself in an odd spot that you're just sort of chiseling out a special little hole for yourself and hoping someone may join you in it, accidentally falling into it, of course.
Yes, accidentally falling into the hole, which is, you know, you have already got me immediately thinking about this sort of the weird La Boheme starving artist stereotype thing. Right.
Well, I'm American, so I'm overfed no matter what.
Yes. This is true. There's always a Wendy's.
There is always a Wendy's. You know, I may not be able to get food stamps, but I can buy $1 double cheeseburgers.
There you go. I had that thought the other day. I drove past the Wendy's around the corner here, and I was like, no, you will die if
you're not allowed.
Eat this food. Yeah, I'm not allowed. Yep. I will die. Okay. No Wendy's for me.
No Wendy's.
So, yeah. So, but at least I'm plugged into the university system. So,
there. But you're fighting against it, so.
I am. I like to think of myself as a reformer rather than a revolution. No. But yeah, I am fighting very much against it because that has also gotten inhumane and awful, and everybody is a character from La Boheme. You know, basically, was it Mimi? That's the one who died of like pneumonia or something. You know, like we're all waiting for our Mimi moment. I think is.
I can understand that.
Is what's happening in this era, but you know, there's a stereotype, and there is. I know. Speaking of me fighting against the university system, there is this. You know, when we go out and try to organize people. There is this, well, I love what I do, and there's a pleasure and a worth to it, so I don't really need to be compensated for it.
Reagan did his job so well, didn't he?
Yes, he did. It's about bootstraps, isn't it?
It is, you know, just saddle it up. You're an American. You know, if you're doing what you love, it'll all come back to you somehow.
Yes.
No word on how it comes back to you, that trickle-down, you know, thing that never actually even becomes down. More than a drop.
Yeah, and you think about how, you know, this weird psychology of austerity works in a government sense. Is if everybody is really poor, if we don't raise the minimum wage, in fact, if we could get rid of the minimum wage, or somehow my sister actually found a job where she makes less than minimum wage.
Oh, nice. I knew there were some around nowadays.
There are some around,
that's floating.
Granted, she lives in the South, too, so like those loopholes are...
she's double fucked.
Yes, she's double fucked. And, she manages to work 40 hours a week and make less than somebody who works at McDonald's for 40 hours a week. And I just... And I've had this conversation, at least through my mother, to her, to say, you know, if she... I just went into fast food, she would get a $2,000 a year raise.
And you can do a lot with $2,000 a year.
Yes, you could. That's like more than $100 a month.
At least afford something.
You can absolutely afford
I don't know what that something is. I don't know what her needs are, but something.
Debt reduction.
Debt reduction, yes. a vehicle of some sort.
Even yeah, a better town. Vehicle of some sort.
Public transportation, if it exists in her town, which it might
does
not.
Not actually. So she lives with my mother in a gated golf community. So you have to be in a car to get in and out. No motorcycles, no bicycles. You can't go in and out on foot. No motorhomes. You have to be in a car of some sort. So it's already, you know.
We are the children of Barry Goldwater.
Yes, we are. It's so awful. But so I organized these people or talked to these people who, yeah, are making sometimes less than fast food workers or... I mean, I just had a conversation with a guy last week who actually lives around the corner from where we're speaking right now. I mean, a true freeway flyer. I mean, I think he, at some point last academic year, taught on 4 different campuses in the region.
Yeah, I've definitely talked to adjuncts who are doing 4 universities within 100 miles of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes it's Indiana, and it's California, and then it's CCAC, and then maybe a pit job or something.
Yeah, I did 2 once. I did it once. I had one. It was 60 miles. I maybe shouldn't name it, or maybe I should. I don't know. But one was downtown, one was 60 miles out of town. And
yeah, and when you're doing 4 classes a week. And
4. So I was doing 6. I was doing 4, 60 out of town, and then 2 here, and I fell asleep behind the wheel 3 times driving home that semester.
Yeah, I can understand that. And yeah. When I worked overnights at a big box retailer, I had the similar issue of falling asleep on the way home at 7 in the morning. There's a poem in the Studs Terkel Blues about that, actually.
That's right, yeah.
Where we lost 3 employees in 1 winter because people would just fall asleep at the wheel and crash and die.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, speaking of it, not that you do requests for reading.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we read that one?
Yeah, you might need to talk for a minute while I can.
Okay, but absolutely. But yeah, so these folks who are struggling in very real sense, and I mean, I do workshops for some of the same folks. We're actually going to do a podcast instead of the workshops for, like, this is how you sign up for food stamps. For college professors who, but they do what they love, Jason. That's what it is, and the love of it. And so none of that matters. I mean, which is, you know, is that Reagan? But it's like post-Reagan, like the medieval monk. You know, there's that story of St. Francis of Assisi who, like, okay, we'll just do bread and water because everything is lettuce and meat and grapes. That's too earthly. So it's just bread and water.
This is too heavenly.
Yes, and so...
This is what happens when you live in a gilded age.
Yes!
You're humiliated enough to just be appreciative of what you get instead of thinking you should fight for more.
Yeah, you just go...
And you're just like, yeah! Well, no, I mean, I've got almost everything I need. Yes. What more could I ask for?
I've got my health, they'll say, yes.
I've got bread and water.
Yeah, well, so...
Cheese might be too much.
Cheese is too much. And so old St. Francis was like found himself then enjoying the bread and water too much. Like he didn't deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, that's what people say, you know, as I think. I actually did have a lady who last semester, she was retired. She said she was retired teaching 6 classes. And I wanted to say, and you got to be friendly and kind to people and listen to them. You know,
right.
So like, listen to you, you got to join this union or I'm going to hit you with a lead pipe, you know, which is the stereotype. That's not how it works. You don't get people to join the team by, like, you know. But I want to say, lady, I have a, quote, full-time position, and you work way harder than I do,
right.
You know. And so he found, so he would do that, he would make a mush. He would take the solid bread.
Put it with the water,
make like a slurry, and then just kind of like drink the slurry. And then, of course, as time went on, he realized he was enjoying the slurry. He found that when he would be hungry, thinking, wow, man, that was some slurry. And so he would then take... excuse me.
Ooh,
so that redlined everything. Not editing that out. He would then take the cinders from the fire and mix it in with his slurry. so that he no longer enjoyed his bread and water slurry.
The fear and loathing unto death, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. And it is weird how people have internalized that and been like, no, this is okay, or this is what reality is.
The myth of the rugged individualist, it's you always make it in America if you just pull yourself up and do this.
Yes.
And you don't deserve anything more than what you can get out yes. of, you know, what you've gotten out of it. And yeah. that's bullshit. I mean, all these... you know, corporate CEOs and whatnot, they all get corporate welfare. They all never have to admit who all helped them get where they were, yes. what nepotism led them to this particular place, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, what place of privilege they come from, right. you know, I mean, you know, the great adage I once heard is like being born on second base for some folks.
Yeah, exactly. You know? You win the ovarian lottery.
Yes. And it doesn't mean you hit a double. It just means...
Yeah, it just means you got started there.
You got started there and just got to round home, you know, or don't get picked off, I guess.
Yeah, it's like playing Monopoly without playing the first turn, you know, and just have to buy everything up as soon as you hit there.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. All right. So this is your most recent book now?
These books came out simultaneously. Simultaneously.
Okay. Yeah. So Stud Circle Blues. We'll talk about Lower 48 in a minute.
Okay.
In a hot minute. But so this is from the Stud Circle Blues, which I guess maybe you explain the concept actually.
Okay.
Don't lose your place. You move.
No,
your
no,
finger.
No, no.
Okay.
No, you're good. I'm good.
Because I'm out of things to say already.
Oh, okay. No, that's fair. So a couple of years ago, I was asked by a Cleveland publisher, Night Ballet Press, which is run by Diane Borsnick, while she was in town to do a chat book. And that moment, I didn't have anything laying around, necessarily. I was working on the Lower 48, but through some conversations that I had had with friends, I had been telling work stories, and they'd ask why I didn't mine that whole world that I had existed in, and we all exist in. I mean, you're at work 40 hours a week, you spend more time there than you spend with anyone else.
Yes.
You're going to write, it's something you should be able to write about. There should be a story. So I sat down and I thought about this chat book for a couple, you know, a week or two, and again, didn't have anything new and contemplated these work stories, and made the decision to sort of just do a poem or two poems about various jobs I'd had in between the ages of 15 and 28. After 28, you sort of resign yourself to what you're doing, and the pain is not maybe quite so acute.
Yeah.
you accepted the shit, perhaps.
Yes.
The Sisyphean mountain of shit that is the work life.
Yes.
But, yeah, so over a very quick period of time, I think a month, I sat down, wrote 9 poems in 2 weeks, another 11 poems the following 2 weeks. And then I did my best not to polish it too much. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to be a book that was... It should sound like it was written by somebody younger than I am.
Mm.
You know, so the Lower 48 went through 10 drafts, and I'd put it away, and then I'd come back and I'd scribble things out and change things. This, it was very much, I changed very little. You know, there was not an editing process, or at least as heavily. As heavy of an editing process. So that's how we arrived at the Studs Terkel Blues. I turned it in. She loved it. And people identify with this book, which is what I guess I hoped for internally.
Yeah. Which, as to go back to the theme of our podcast, is that all you can hope for at this point is people go, I like it.
Yeah, I mean, I think at a certain level, I mean, it depends on what your model of success is.
Yeah.
And I don't have the uber competitive American model of success. I don't believe in success that way. I think if you're doing what you enjoy doing, who gives a fuck if you make an extra $5 out of it or not?
Yeah.
Do it, enjoy it, let it happen, and maybe it helps somebody else out somewhere along the line.
Absolutely.
It might be a better way of doing things, but I don't want to say that. I don't want to enforce my will on anyone in that regard. I don't want to be a white man about this.
Yes. Well, yeah, there's that, but there's also the things should be worth things.
I agree with you. I agree with you, but sharing things is also nice.
Yes.
The socialist in me appreciates sharing.
Yes.
Also the 5-year-old who learned how to share. All right, so I'm going to read you this poem now. It's short. It's called A Poem About Meetings. This has become commonplace, the meeting before the shift, but only when something important happens. Tonight, this is the third time in a year about an employee who didn't make it home from work. This is the second lady who died when she fell asleep behind the wheel, slid off the road and mangled herself against a tree. There was another lady who did the same thing. And then another lady who spent 3 months in the hospital after breaking most of the bones in her body in a similar collision. Blackguards. We all crack a few gallows jokes, uncomfortable as we take inventory of days that we can't remember how we got into bed. We count the nod-offs that accompany the end of a 5 or 6 or 7 a.m. shift. It's February now. Most of us haven't seen the sun since November. The sun rises at 8, it sets at 5. We all have to sleep sometime.
Nice.
Simple to the point, I hope.
Simple to the point, to the, yeah, sleep.
Sleep, it's necessary. And
it is, yeah, which is sleep, food. We live in this era where it is like human life is about serving this abstract idea of an economy, mm-hmm. as opposed to...
It's a vague maybe, form of slavery.
Yeah, as opposed to maybe our economy serving the interests exactly. of human life, you know, and just those things, and maybe not even being, you know, ashamed to ask for or need or want or whatever.
You're an individual. Yes. You need to do this yourself. You can make it, man.
Yes, you can. Just
all you got to do is get a leg up.
Leg up or a lotto ticket or that's well, you know, that was, you know, hey, I read that in the week like 2-3 weeks ago. I think it was over a quarter. It was over a quarter. I think it was maybe more than that. Significantly more than that. Americans that if they had an emergency expense of $400 would have to sell something or borrow something.
Yes.
Or borrow money just to pay that, you know.
Yeah.
And so there's that sort of, you know, razor's edge that people live on.
Yeah, I don't know if like we were talking
can't
about
fuck
this
up once, but
at one point in time, but my latest joke about finances is that I'm now in that rare class of Americans who are saving just for emergencies. You know, so like I had $1,200 in the bank, and then the car had an inspection and wiped $1,200 out. Now I have no money. I'm building my savings back up again. I'm waiting for the next emergency. So it's a rare class of Americans who are actually doing that. I'm saving money.
Yes, absolutely.
But like I'm only
25% or whatever. But yeah.
But I'm only saving it until the next bomb goes off
in
my existence.
Oh God, and that lovely feeling. I remember this when I was, my 21. I got out of college to 20 whatever year, well to 30 whatever year old jobs where it was that, and I'll never forget, that feeling. It would be like Tuesday, and the bank account would have very little money in it, and the car, the gas tank would have very little gas in it, and thinking to myself, this is going to be interesting. Can I make it to Friday?
Yeah.
I at least signed up for direct deposit. I can drive to work. If I could, I could stop Friday morning on the way to the office to get gas.
There is a writer from Johnstown named Adam Macho, who's a friend of mine, and he has I think it's a short story about him living in Johnstown and working at Monroeville Mall. And he and his wife have a kid, and you know he can't afford gas, so there's times that he's just going down the hills in neutral.
Oh my God.
And then kicking the car into gear and driving.
I never tried that.
And milking, you know, and then stealing money out of the register at work. I shouldn't have mentioned his former employer, by the way, by name, but yeah, taking a little money out of the register along the way, just because I said that.
Well,
bleep out the name of that corporation, please.
Absolutely. Do you want me to bleep out last name too? Or just,
no, that's
just
fine.
Just name of the corporation. Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. In fact, I'm going to write down so I don't have to find it again.
I think I did mention it, but
yes, you did. You named the store in the mall,
and I shouldn't have done that.
No,
you see. So, but yeah, you know.
And folks, piece of trivia for those of you who are consistent listeners, both of you. This will be our second Razor Blade edit.
By the time we're done with this conversation, it might happen a few more times.
It might happen a few
times. I tend to be more candid than I should be sometimes.
The podcast is still young, yes. But I remember that feeling of existential dread.
Oh, yeah.
Of like, oh, how am I going to get to where I need to be in...
Counting quarters.
The mail making your heart like beat a little bit, a few beats quicker, because like, what's going to be in there?
Yeah.
What's the phone bill? That was back when you had long distance telephone. Oh, yeah. You still had to pay money for individual calls.
But we pay more money now for our cell phones than we did for landlines. Yeah. I mean, basic landline charge was like $20, and then like, you know, from there it would go up. But phone bills were usually. At least even, you know, in my teenage household, we're never more than like $70 or $80. And that's what my phone costs me now. So they got you one way or the other.
That's true. And you're speaking to a man with two landlines, actually.
Oh, Jesus.
Because who doesn't? It's 2015. Who doesn't have two landlines?
I don't even have one. It's funny. I was helping a friend tear out a carpet and put in a floor and pull the shill. Last week, and I was looking at a phone jack on the wall as I was tearing things up, and I looked at him and I said, how long until this becomes an antique and we all don't know what this is again?
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, now if you look in new apartments, it's not necessarily phone jacks, it's Ethernet jacks, things of that nature, but not... You don't see phone jacks necessarily in newer or remodeled apartments.
Yes. So. My old house in Greenfield had, there was one electrical outlet underneath the radiator. I think they put the heating element in afterwards, and it wasn't a 220 line. It was some kind of like, before they standardized plugs.
Oh, okay.
Like some kind of like ancient electrical outlet like pattern, like the slot pattern was different. And it was like, this isn't British, I don't think. But, I mean, that's what it looked like.
That was going to be my guess.
One of those, it was some sort of, like, overseas, like, plug system or whatever. And it's just like they hadn't standardized it yet. And they just never... I don't think it had juice going to it, but they never switched it over or whatever.
You hope it didn't have juice going to it.
No, I don't own that house anymore.
Yeah, that's fine.
Fuck it. It's not my problem anymore. Yeah. I fixed a lot that was wrong with that house. That's the thing. The people who got that house...
They didn't get just a paint job.
They didn't get just a paint job.
They got some fixing.
A lot of things that I had to do by myself that I at least knew how to do because I couldn't afford to pay anybody to do it. Which is also, I guess, is there, you know, to maybe get a new direction here, this... A virtue of necessity that comes from living and creating in the age of austerity where all formats are obsolete. Nothing is really worth anything.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know? Yeah, I mean, I have audiobooks up on Bandcamp at this point in time that, you know, they're just there. They're decoration. I do them. I pay somebody to actually record these things, but... And nobody visits them. It spikes like a round of reading. You know? Like I'll get like 5 hits or 10 hits. Especially if I'm out of town. You know, before or after a reading, I'll get some hits. But most of the time, it just sits there, and nobody on Bandcamp is looking for spoken word poetry. Apparently,
yes. Well, I will make sure there is a link on the podcast so that anybody's like, oh, that one about the people who died in the cars. That was good. You know. See what else
all,
he's got.
All the poems about people who die in cars are good. It's just, no, probably not, actually. Never mind.
Well, that is a real American way to go, especially if you're commuting.
I thought from you were going to say, especially if you were Camus, but...
Yeah. Oh. Dang. Maybe I should get one of those machines and you just press a button and it gives you, like, an electronic rim shot, like that would be. Or just find a sample and do more razor blade edits.
Or you could just get a drummer.
I could get a drummer. That would be weird. That would be weird but cool to record this and just have somebody just sit there and be
bored. Or a trained monkey.
Bored for an hour and then, you know, but then, like, the person, you can't speak. This is not the button. You know, like, or something, would they speak? Would they be my Andy Richter? How would I do that?
Well, if they have a wry sense of humor, it might actually help the podcast. You know, they could speak occasionally, just like throw a random curveball out there and change the entire direction of the program, which is what we've already done like three or four times anyway without the help of another person.
Yes. Yes, we have. And maybe I could do like a thing where I do like a signal, you know, since this is audio, not video, I could be like, you know, touch my nose three times, help me, I'm stuck or something, you know.
I don't know what to talk about anymore.
Shit, this is going nowhere. But yeah, I mean, I think there is, though, the thing to think about, or at least the other thing I think about, or at least has to be mentioned, talking about folks who are trying to make ends meet, or who are living this, you know, life that, you know, Barbara Ehrenreich was a tourist in. You know, she dropped in and was like, oh my God, this sucks for lots of people. And, you know, it's weird that there's something that's so obvious that so many people are going through that there has to be like a book. And they go, oh my God, I didn't know that was the rest of the world, or at least our sort of media conversation.
Well, but I mean, that's part of the whole lack of conversation is that. We're not talking about the fact that we're going through the same thing. And Studs Terkel is one of those things that people then go, oh, I had this boss that did this to me. You know, as Americans, we talk so fucking much, as we're exhibiting right now.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
But we don't talk about important things, and we skirt issues like crazy. So we don't actually have an honest discussion about things that should be discussed.
Yeah.
Work is one of them. It's something that we all do. It's something that we suffer through. It's something that is dehumanizing. And capitalism, in particular, ensures that your work is going to be dehumanizing and not enriching, generally speaking. Yeah. I know there's lots of people that say, I found this great job, and
I mean, yeah, there are people who get ahead, I mean, or make out or whatever, but I think it's also in this question of, you know, thinking about, you know, that metaphor of the invisible hand, you know, that throwaway line in Wealth of Nations. And for a lot of people, that's just gospel, you know. Right. Not to think like, no, we got here a certain way. There was policies and subsidies and tax breaks and laws that were repealed and things that people also fought for, you know, to get as far as we've gotten.
Right.
You know, to say, oh, we got here for a reason, and that's why we have this, and that we have to maybe fight to maintain certain ideas or ideals or things that are at least decent for people to have.
But we've forgotten about all of that.
We don't have this.
A large chunk of it.
Yeah, which I sometimes in my... It's weird because it's cynically hopeful, but it's mostly cynical that we just have to go through the 19th century or the 1930s again. And then it'll be okay. I don't want to have to live through that.
I mean, the problem with going through the 30s again is then you have to go through fascism and the wars and the president who attempted, you know, to make everything right and bring everything to a more social-centric place, then throwing the doors open to, you know, the military-industrial complex right after that, being like, hey, you know what? Have your monopolies. We need you right now because we got to kill the great German bear.
Yes. Yeah.
I guess it's the great Russian bear. Pardon.
Yeah. Well, now it's the great Russian bear again.
Yeah.
We're back. But yeah, I mean, to not have that sort of lived memory of struggle or of...
We forgot all of that on purpose. Yeah. And I mean, some of those programs still exist. A matter of fact, most of the proper social legislation that FDR got through, Social Security, the National Labor Relations Board, these things still exist, but they're in such shambles at this point in time.
Yeah.
We understand Social Security is not going to exist, probably. As we get older, we're in our late 30s, unless the boomers change everything, and they may before they go, because they're going to get pissed when they get told they can't retire. After they've been told, hey, if you behave and you do what you're supposed to, you're going to retire and you're going to have severance and, you know, you'll be taken care of.
Yeah, which I guess that's the other thing, too, is there is that mythology or that idea, you know, things are just going to work out or at least there's a sort of social bargain, which either for a lot of people, they don't realize what their bargain is, or they realize that and then the rules changed on them, which totally, you know, fucks a lot of people up. And
well, you have a government that's so far removed from the people that are it's supposed to be helping or guiding or laying the principle down that you no longer feel invested in it, so therefore you don't pay attention to the fact that there are these things that exist for you. You were saying you have professors that don't know how to file for food stamps, and anybody who's ever filed for food stamps knows what a fucking humiliating, you know, exhibit it is from A to B. Why would you really want to?
Yeah.
Which is one of the great ways that austerity works. Poor people have to beg for it. If you're a poor person and you have to beg, you're going to be like, you know what? I might be able to make this work without you.
Yeah, I certainly, when I was in graduate school, I should have applied for some kind of assistance or whatever. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I applied for the first time 2 or 3 years ago, and I was hurting very badly. And I've been off and on hurting for years, obviously,
yeah,
under these economies. And when I got my interview call, I was told right away, I was said, you know, $1,200 a month is what you have to make to get food stamps.
Yeah.
You make $1,230.
Oh.
You get nothing. And I was just like, fuck you, man. Can't you, like, buy me even some bananas?
Yeah. You know? Because the $30 makes
a yeah, I mean, the, like, that line is evidently, yeah, that $30 is the line between you and, oh, hey, I have heaven in my hands right now. This extra $30, I'm going to buy a steak, and then I'm going to a swimming pool.
See a movie star.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Which, I mean, I know when I worked at a bookstore for a while in Monroeville, I had eventually later on, like, I left and went back to school, and somebody I worked with there was getting too many hours.
Mm.
And too many hours for her children to be eligible for the CHIP.
Oh, okay.
Public assistance, children's health care, because you can take care of children, I guess.
Which is absolutely maybe absurd. Children should just give them food, for Christ's sake.
Yes!
Nobody should be hungry before they're 20.
Before they're 20, they shouldn't be hungry, and they should, you know, be able to see a doctor if they need to. And she had a child with chronic illness, and yeah, she had to quit.
Mm-hmm.
She had to quit because she got too many hours, and she was going to lose her children's health care. And being stuck in that middle ground of, I need help, but I can't get it, or if I take care of myself too much, I'm really screwing myself.
Right.
Which is so counterintuitive, because she wanted to work and was good at her job and was very helpful to me, who'd never worked retail before. And
see, that's a myth, though. You know, that people don't want to work. They want the government to hand them things.
Yeah.
All of us want to work. We just need somebody to pay us so that we can actually afford what
yes,
we want.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
If you live in a consumer society, it just, in my head, the algorithm would go, if you live in a consumer society and the people who are making things and also consuming things, if they make enough money to buy the things that they want to consume, then that money keeps going up, and it then goes back down, and it becomes like this nice cycle.
Yes.
And I feel like in America we might have been there, you know, through the 50s and 60s into the 70s.
Yeah, before and the then, shock,
yeah. Yeah, and then yeah. Reagan again.
Yes, then Reagan.
The children everything. Of Goldwater.
Yes. Which then, too, then the flip side of that, though, with, I think, consumerism, because I'm going through this thing where, you know, the magic of Facebook, I can find out what people I went to elementary school with think about things now, or whatever, and I've actually gone through this massive purge, and maybe not even unfriending people, but just hiding them from, you know, because I just don't want to know. Because it's weird that there are people, and some of them are actually doing okay, I think, or at least the way they represent themselves, who have then turned really bitter and really angry and really right-wing and even sort of not quasi-racist, but full-on, like, racist. And it's just weird, and it's like some of the folks, it's like shocking who it is. And I think about them as consumerists, but then the other thing about consumerism, of course, is that if you ever got everything you really wanted, you would stop being a consumerist immediately, and then the whole that whole cycle would fall apart.
I suppose so, that's possible.
And so, because people just stop buying shit because I got all the shit I need, you know, and that's
then
it.
Then they find new ways to market shit to you.
And market shit. But if you were really satisfied, if somebody was ever really satisfied, just, I don't need, I'm good. And so I think about my friends who probably work very hard and have probably gone through years of struggle. I mean, the Douglas Copeland thing is true. You know, everyone said, everybody has a terrible 20s, he said, and it's true.
Yeah.
20s suck, you know? And so they went through all of that shit and are now coming out on the other side and maybe still can't have the car they want or the house they want or whatever, or looking at, you know, those who have children thinking, oh, college is on the way for them.
Right.
I have to... And them turning that into bitterness towards other people, and bitterness towards people who maybe aren't as fortunate or who do maybe legitimately fuck up, but even then... This the very sense of human dignity is, okay, people are actually maybe allowed to fuck up every now and then and still be able to eat and shit. You know right. what I mean? Like, that's just humanity. And they've gone a different route than basic humanity. And it's sad and weird and shocking to see it happen to folks.
But, I mean, that's been the hierarchy of America since... the 30s at least, if not before, where you get to blame the people below you for what's happening rather than the people above you who are actually in control of things.
Yeah.
You know, we have this sort of reverse mentality of what is happening, and you know, we think from the bottom up instead of the top down.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous.
Which is...
Poor people aren't fucking anything up. They're just trying to keep their shit together.
Yeah.
Rich people are fucking everything up.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's awful. Which also, the two, I think I want to talk about the... Like, we got to get talking about the lower four.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, is the way that maybe we... The way that our media culture, and I think, you know, mainstream movies, mainstream sitcoms, whatever, portray what American life is like, and then what it really is.
Yeah. Wow.
And what really is for a lot of people. And I was thinking about, you know, even the lower 48. I love first thing, actually, what is that called? The prologue, that's the name of the English.
Oh, that was...
Yeah, Kerouac falls the first time, and that last line, where you talk about, you know, Kerouac never mentioned it would be like this. We beat at home, no gas, Justin was beat, I was beat. Kerouac never mentioned it would be like this.
Well, I mean, for me, that poem is about my first road trip, and I don't know... You know, how your road trips went as a kid, but, like, you're 20 years old and jumping in a car for the first time.
Yeah.
You have no fucking clue what you're doing. You have no clue what things cost, you know, what mileage is or anything else, and you just sort of bumble into this experience. And you find out about an America that exists. And you've read these books, you've seen these movies that glorify. And there's never boredom. There's never infighting, necessarily, or all these things that kind of go wrong. There's not flat tires or near car accidents or almost getting arrested for running the Canadian border or...
Oh... Yeah, yeah. Did not know how that worked. Yeah,
yeah. These again, things
part
just,
of the awfulness of the '20s,
right? And you're learning as you're going. And yeah, that whole poem. That's the mess of that trip. And you know, as you read Kerouac's having fun. Even when they're broke, they're still somehow having fun. There's enough Benzedrine that they don't care. Or you know.
Yeah, which is, and you think about it, I mean, there's someone who looked to find sort of the dirty nonconformist old America or whatever, or the America that wasn't what was being sort of bought in. Even, I mean, I taught, actually, the last semester, Henry Miller's Air Conditioned Nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is a way better book in regards to the representation of America in the 60s than maybe anything Kerouac did.
Absolutely.
You know, even Allen Ginsberg's Fall of America, I think, addresses those things a little bit better. Kerouac's on for the ride no matter what. He's not making a statement about what he's seeing. He's not laying down on one side or the other of a fence.
Yeah, you know? And they never mentioned the times they ate roadkill.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That never made it You know,
and see, those are the things that you should be putting into your book.
Yeah, or even, I mean, you think like Big Sur, there's a couple moments there mm-hmm. where like him and Lou Welsh, it's really obvious that like, whoa, alcoholism is bad. Yeah, oh, those people are really fucked up. And, but it's just sort of like, oh, and this thing happened, and then somebody got the DTs and had hallucinations because mm-hmm. we hadn't had any booze for a while, and you're just like, oh, fuck.
You Desolation know? Angels kind of yep. does the same
yes,
thing.
That's
especially
right.
I mean, it's such a hard book. I mean, it's a beautiful book and a really difficult book. He's losing his shit in the first half of it from being alone for 40 days, and then you can just see this, like, whittled out shell of an alcoholic writing the rest of the book.
Yes.
After the heroin overdose in Tangiers, and yeah. Yeah, it's just
yeah, and him talking in that book, he talks about the problems he has with fame and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, and the police lights are like the TV lights, and you know, all of that. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, you think, and so you think there's this book about you know road trips that sort of deconstructs the road trip mythology itself. You know, to say, you know, because that's what drew me to Kerouac. It was like, ah, this is the real America. This is a thing. And even that, as you point out,
it's not the thing.
It's not actually the thing, and the thing is much more frightening.
It's much more frightening in trying to, you know, encapsulate the America that you see at any given point in time is so much larger than anything you could actually write.
Yeah,
you know, you can try. Whitman did a pretty good job of it. Other people have done decent jobs, and not to say that Kerouac didn't. Kerouac's a great writer, but Kerouac is the gateway drug that kind of opens the door to literature for you.
Yes, yeah, that's what he did for me.
18 to 25, and you're picking it up, or 15 to 25, and picking up on the road for the first time. It opens up a wider yes. world, or it shuts the door for you on literature forever. It does one or the other. You know, Hunter S. Yeah. Thompson sort of does the same thing. He definitely gets to the darker side of America.
Mm-hmm. The wave crests and all.
Yeah, that was still one of my favorite speeches of all time.
Yes.
You know, that soliloquy and Fear and Loathing, where we can see the crest of the wave. It's mentioned, I think, in either the California poem or the Nevada poem.
Yeah.
That I wrote in the lower 48. So.
Yeah. And so, I mean, your road trip experiences, you know, I mean, I guess. You know, I guess were you on the interstates or were you on the U.S.?
I'm a back roads guy.
You're a back roads guy? Yeah.
Good, yeah.
Good. Which is also when you see the America that's abandoned.
Yes. Then you really see what a Walmart does.
Yeah.
you know, you can count them on 20-minute intervals, but then you can get away and just see these towns that have been gutted. There's nothing yeah. left. And yeah. everybody's going to... you know, the mall. I was in a town called Mineta, Virginia a couple of years ago, which is south of Roanoke, just a little bit. There's a state park there. Sorry, brain drifted as I was trying to remember details of where I was at. I drove into town knowing that there was a state park, looking for a place to eat. And the main street was gone. It was pretty much just all dilapidated, falling down buildings. So I made a left turn back onto the road and followed it down. And about a half mile from town is a strip mall in French colonial architecture that's now called Main Street Mineta.
Oh, wow.
And there was a pizza shop and like a deli and a barbecue place and a grocery store and a Dollar General. And that was it. And that's new America. That's where the old weird America goes away and you get this very tacky prefab modern bullshit in.
Yeah, which reminds me of downtown Brownsville.
I've spent a lot of time taking pictures in downtown Brownsville.
If nothing comes up tomorrow, that might be what I go do.
Got a bit of a thing for Rust Belt porn, sorry.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, it's our Detroit, you mm-hmm. know? It's I always, you know, and, oh, and for
so
me...
so is Braddock. I mean, so most of the Mon Valley, you know, with like the exception of New Eagle... is that way as you ride down 837
yeah,
into Washington, PA.
Yeah, absolutely. Which
or,
is,
I mean, even Altoona, around where you grew up, I mean, there's the land of time for
Well, here's the thing. I actually grew up in New Jersey.
Oh, that's right.
Where things were bright and new, but I have family from Johnstown. Where in Jersey, you really have to search for anything old or anything, you know, and there's just so many goddamn people there that there's not much space for decay. And so I always was like, what's that? That looks different. And, you know, spending those 2 weeks at Grandma's house in Johnstown was a revelation. And I remember a little bit of Johnstown before the mill closed. And, you know, it was 84 is when really the bottom fell out of that town. And it's still... There was an article in the Tribune Democrat this week about... You know, they're gonna think about like radical solutions to deal with blight, to deal with just the sheer number of abandoned homes that have sometimes been abandoned now for 20, 30 years, and they're never gonna come back, and the people are never gonna come back.
This is where a jobs bill would have come in handy. We could have used a new CCC throughout the course of this decade that we're in.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have
to do stuff like that.
To do exactly. City blight is going to be a huge issue as generations come, and especially, you know, in the environmental situation that we're already in, having those situations, you know, these abandoned houses that are not useful to anybody. Yep. They can be knocked down, made into parks. They can be knocked down, they can be made into farms after the lead and shit is cleaned out from the soil. I mean, that's a complicated discussion, but this is something that a CCC would have definitely done.
Yeah.
And we, of course, have a Republican Congress that blocked any Obama jobs bill that could have started that, even in the right direction. So,
what I like to think about, or I think about the urban spaces anyway, is there was something I read, you know, ideas of people thinking about, well, what happens if, you know, we don't transfer away from a carbon economy or carbon transportation, you know, what's going to happen? You know, remember when gas first was spiking around $3-4 a gallon? And like, what the fuck? You know, they would always, you know, WPXI especially, which is one of the local newspapers, those of you who are not from Pittsburgh, they would always do, whenever gas was high, they would just kind of go to a gas station somewhere and find some dope filling up a Ford Explorer, and it was like, what do you think about these high gas prices? And they're like, it sucks, but what are you going to do? You know, that was reporting.
But that's the American statement. I mean,
it sucks, but what are you going to do?
All across the board, you can ask those questions. It sucks, but what are you going to do?
Yeah. Which is weird for a democracy, for when people, or a democracy and a nation where people think about how they're empowered and their own subjectivity and their thought of who they are is about it. I'm empowered, goddammit. But then there's that learned helplessness that goes along with it. And the thought is that, you know, are the exurbs, are the suburbs, and you think Monroeville is dying a slow, painful death.
Oh, it is.
As is, you know, West Mifflin and other parts of West Mifflin.
Oh, I mean, look at the East Hills.
Yes.
That way from where we're, well, that way from where we're sitting.
We're sitting, yeah.
Yeah. You know, you have what was a massive industrial suburb, for lack of a better term, for the mills in Braddock and McKeesport and up the river. And all those people moved to the hills, and mills pulled out. All those people left. Where they went,
who knows? But talking about, you know, sort of like suburban, like the new suburbia, or places like where my mom and sister live, you know, are those places going to be, you know, that's where the poor people are going to go?
Probably.
You know, and then people, I'll overpay for a condo downtown. So I don't have to pay for gas or whatever. And those people will be marooned out there saying, you know, thinking like, do you have like three families of immigrants living in a McMansion trying to grow crops in the yard? And I think about that as a future. I was like, yeah, you know, that actually, I can get into that. Hopefully, actually, for those people, no, but it would be nice nice to see the McMansions.
A new suburban farming initiative.
Yes, know? Exactly. You know,
three Latvian families and a McMansion with, like, 3 acres of cabbage.
Yes. Better be cabbage. Corn. I've tried to grow corn. It wants to die.
Okay.
Corn wants to die. That's the thing about our corn-based... if we want to talk about those issues, corn-based cuisine is... corn wants to die.
Well,
I mean, it's not sexually attracted to fire, but it wants to die. So that's the only way... Stole that joke from The Simpsons.
Thank you for giving it up on that.
Yes, absolutely.
Give the credit where it's due.
Oh, absolutely. Great meta text that is The Simpsons. Wow, did we ever talk about anything we wanted to really talk about?
We talked a little bit about Studs Terkel, and we did mention the...
Would you like to read something actually from the Lower 48 before we move on?
Was there a poem that you wanted to hear from the Lower 48?
Oh, boy, I have post-it notes. Oh, man, I don't know. Well, so, okay, I'm thinking New Vision of Hell, These Days of Heaven... Or what's this one? 1863. Those were the ones that I put little post-it notes in. But you could read. It's your damn book. You can read whatever you want.
You know what? I'm gonna buck that trend and go with the Ballad of 40 Mosquitoes.
Okay,
which is a Georgia poem. But considering what happened yesterday in Charleston, South Carolina, I think this poem resonates still yet again. So this is in two parts. This is from the Lower 48. This is called The Ballad of 40 Mosquitoes. 1. Cypress tree alligator swamps surround Fort King George. I invent the Ballad of 40 Mosquitoes for no other reason than to keep my chest moving, leaving bugs no room to rest. I've been warned mosquitoes here can exsanguinate a man in 2 minutes. In freshets, along banks of waterways, I spy ancient dragons, swamp monsters, evidence that the South was never civilized. We opted to fake adaptation. 2. Mother's Day. Dark Valdosta skies. Women freshly painted in taffeta and polyester robes get lost in the wind that trails between church and the Sunday buffet at O'Neill's. But today I'd rather starve. As I pass the dying DeSoto, I hear a radio commercial crackle about walls of automatic weapons for sale, because we can't afford to lose our freedom. But what freedom were we referring to? In Andersonville, 150 years ago, you could smell this place from a county line. 45,000 men lived in the space of a mile with one spring for toilet, bath, and drinking. Passive earthworks walk with crows and ghosts. Fences reconstructed. Shebangs vacant except for the lice that infest them. I listen to the wind. Its breath carries sorrow more than death. Radios and history converge. Captain Henry Wirtz was hanged for treason at a time when all men committed treason. He hanged for the 13,000 men who died in his charge, and as he swings from a noose of resurrection moss, the discussions that led to that war have never been finished. 150 years of bodies, a Jeremiah born in blood, while we still celebrate the wrong men, and for all that blood, men are still not free. Radio Crackle continues messages to backwoods Georgia, and I look for an ad that asks, are any of us truly free? And if not, will one or even a whole wall of AR-15s change a motherfucking thing? I am broken tonight. My ornate melancholy rises. I drive west across Georgia. The rain comes fast. The torrents will break as I hit the Alabama line. But here, I can watch the breaks in clouds, Keller splashes, the loneliest Georgia sunset, as I stop at the loneliest Georgia crossroads. I think that hit on at least half the things we talked about.
Yes, it did.
It was a summary of sorts.
Summary of sorts, and yeah. Oh, the South. Anyway, we'll just move on. And now it's time for the bottom five, a series of questions not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right, question one. Reincarnation is real. And you had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, what kind of disease would you be? You were like a germ or a virus or...
I don't know. Ecola probably eats better than any of them, so let's go with that.
Like it! All right, question two. I got to do a last minute change because we talked about question two, actually, and it would just be a recap. Question two, which is the former question three. And hopefully you have a long-winded answer so I can pick another question. Out of all the possible ways to die, what is the way you least want to die?
car crash.
Car crash.
We'll come back to that. I mean, I feel like we're all destined to die in either a mass shooting or a car crash at this point in time in America.
Or cancer.
Well, it's getting there, you know. But as I drive nowadays, I just see so many infuriating things. You know, people randomly stopped on the road talking to their GPS or talking to their phone, texting and driving. People not paying attention to the fact that they have a 2,000-pound vehicle in their control at the moment that they're not controlling anything.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to lead us to self-driving cars faster than anything. My fear is car crashes at this point.
Car crashes. And, you know, there's already, you know, the stuff, I think it was the UK Independent had it yesterday, a link saying, or a story about, you know, the one of the things when you program the self-driving car, when it's time to have the collision. what is the self-driving car aim for? And the thought is being that people's self-driving cars are going to, depending on the algorithm of the loss of life or whatever, laws of probability, it will be you. Your self-driving car will steer away from the busload of nuns.
I love the concept.
And off the cliff.
Of survival of the fittest now, including machines that will decide to kill you.
Yes.
It's like attempted suicide, mass suicides. These could be positive things in the future, but it's even better if you can just find the machine that you're in. That's just like, you know what? I'm done with you. You're an ass. Fuck off. Here's the wall.
Yeah, and that would be totally hackable, too, I'm sure.
God, that's a whole new world of terrorism that I haven't even got to. You just opened a window.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was the guy who supposedly with his laptop was able to hack the plane he was on. You heard about this?
No,
the guy was able to, like, get the plane to turn left. Like, basically, he says, oh, we're left turn, and then the pilot's like, what the fuck? Yeah, I mean, he's going to jail for a long time, but he sort of did it to prove that it was possible. And so, I mean, I have a fancy schmancy car that has OnStar, and you can do all sorts of things, you know. One of the things is, like, spend money forever, you know, even if you own it outright. And one of the things is, if the car gets stolen, they could cut the power to it. Like, somebody somewhere could just go off.
Yep, and that's it.
And you're done.
Yeah, I have OnStar, but I don't pay for it. So all I do, you know, when I accidentally hit the button that's by the, you know, rearview mirror there, it just says, if you'd like to have OnStar, please call us and we'll charge you blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, I'm sorry. I was just trying to adjust the mirror.
Yes. Oh, something to look forward to. But yeah, so car crash. Okay, I can dig it.
That's fair.
All right, new question three. Actually, and thank you, I have figured this out. So new question three. All right, this is the bad porno plot question. If you had access to a time machine, and the purpose of that time machine was for erotic purposes, for whatever reason, to save the human race or whatever, name a historical figure you wish you could have sex with.
A historical
figure that you wish that, you know, if you were...
Does Veronica Lake count?
Right, I think so, yeah.
Okay, I will go with the actress Veronica Lake.
There you go, for actress Veronica.
I mean, she was a crazy schizophrenic. It would have been fun, right?
Yeah, and then you could leave. That's the thing, before she could, like, burn all the
Maybe I could keep her from dying in a gutter in New York City in 1968.
Maybe. Might get weird.
I'm sorry, we're entertaining each other. I don't know if we're going to entertain anybody else.
No, maybe it's like the laugh track, you know?
Okay,
like,
yeah.
People, oh, that's supposed to be funny because there's in the background. Maybe that's what we're doing. I think that's part of the appeal of car talk. I think I laugh more, actually, when I do this.
Yeah.
To, like, because it's for show. Ooh, dirty truth of podcast life. All right, question four. Back on track. This is the Christopher Hitchens question.
Okay.
Okay, and as a writer, I think you'd appreciate this. Of the living villains of history, so someone has to be alive and a villain of history, whose obituary would you like to write? If you could have the opportunity, when somebody kicks it, you get that, you know, the 1,000 words
current?
In the New York Times. Yes, has to be alive.
Has to be
villain
alive.
Of history.
This is not a fanciful question, because I was thinking about how much I'd love to tear down Nathan Bedford Forrest, but... live people, let's see. I mean, the Koch brothers would be such a good answer to that, but...
And it would be in tune with our theme.
It would be in tune with the theme. For lack of a better answer at this moment, I'm going to go with the Koch brothers.
Ah, oh, maybe they could both die in a car crash.
Yes.
Together. Yes.
By a car that got hacked.
Yes.
I believe we all just got ourselves in jail now. After that, yes. The FBI will now be paying attention to your podcast.
Well, hey, I need polls. I need, be able to write reviews on iTunes for it, and, it'll be good, all right, question five. We are almost out of the woods. Are you ready?
Sure.
What would your idea of purgatory be like?
You mean this wasn't it?
Oh!
I'm just trying to do a podcast, man.
It was a general statement of dread, existential dread of my life, yeah. Not at your podcast. But, if you want to take it as a shot,
it's... Well, but purgatory is different, because you think, we got 50 more years. Maybe.
You're optimistic.
I'm very optimistic.
I figured 75 and I'm done. At that moment I start shooting heroin and it's over.
Which that should be a thing, actually. You should get to a certain age where just everything's legal.
Yeah.
Because you're gonna die anyway. Yeah. So you can OD, you can have a heart attack. They can cut your feet off from the diabetes. Mm-hmm. Whatever, it'd be okay. You should be allowed to shoot up at 75.
That's my lifelong goal at this point in time. I'm saving heroin till 75.
There you go. Like it. Purgatory, or at least Dante's purgatory, you're there for 500 years.
Yeah, you just take this mediocre sort of existence. Nothing gets better, nothing gets worse. Isn't that America right now?
I don't know, man. There's some really nice smartphone apps.
I think that makes purgatory worse.
Probably. I guess it depends on the app or the thing or the people or the awfulness. Or I haven't seen an Apple Watch in the wild yet.
Or the Google Glasses thing.
I had an ex-student who got Google Glasses. And he actually asked me. I guess he liked me. He said if he could get me in.
Get you in.
Get me in.
Come join the club.
And I think I saw him wear it once. And then he didn't have it anymore. I just was like, I that would drive me insane.
Google reality is questionable enough. I don't know if I can add anything that makes it even more tenuous.
Yeah. Well, on that happy note.
We were running on an existential theme, weren't we?
Yes, we were. I think that's about it. Now, we will have links for places to buy your books, right? And we'll have your Bandcamp for things and whatever the heck other things Jason Holdinger web portals need to happen. We'll have links to that. Our next episode will eventually happen, and, it'll be about something. Our homepage, where you can find new and old episodes. In fact, the entire We're All Gonna Die archives can be found at gonnadiepodcast.com. One word. We're also on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at gonnadiepodcast. And We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook. And speaking of failed Google products, Google Plus as well. Thanks to Brett Zork, as always, for the lovely theme music. Later, meets.
Thanks, Matt.